Row him easy, row him slow, and row him on cross to Sapelo. His mama's old on Sapelo.
Welcome back to Travel Bags with Anita and Friends. Now, if you guys are just joining us, we are talking about Sapelo Island, the beautiful coastal island right off the coast of Georgia, just right down the road. And we are commemorating also to a very important woman on the island, and that is Cornelia Walker Bailey. She was very, very instrumental in not only preserving the culture, but actually the land, Sapelo itself. And there were quite a few people that worked with her. And one person was Nicholas Hornacamp, who works at the University of Tennessee in Chattanooga as a professor. And he's been going to the island since 2005, working there, doing research and working with Cornelia. So, Nick, may I call you Nick?
Yes, you may.
Nick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, why don't you just kind of jump in and just tell us exactly what work were you doing there? I mean, what type of research were you doing on Sapelo?
I visited Sapelo in 2005, met Cornelia, and toured the island for sites, and it was just amazing what I was seeing there. I'm particularly interested in looking at the Geechee component and on plantations that are found over the island. And that initial visit got me fired up, and I was there the next year and been there almost every year since. I've worked on St. Simons and Ossabaw a little bit too, but mostly Sapelo. And much of that research was predicated on conversations and discussions I had with Cornelia. She was very interested in the archaeology of the island as much as the oral history. She's, of course, the oral historian matriarch of Sapelo, so I was very fortunate to meet her and work with her. And she actually inspired us to do some specific projects. One thing she wanted to know about was a foundation in Behavior Cemetery that she thought might be part of a slave hospital or something like that. And so she asked, she said, if you're doing archaeology here, would you mind doing something that the community would be interested in? I said, yeah, that'd be great. And so she really got that going, that whole study we did of Behavior Cemetery. She also very recently was our source of information about the Igbo group that came from Africa in bondage and ended up apparently on Sapelo Island as well as St. Simons Island. And so we interviewed her, have a transcript of that 40-minute conversation. She talked about everything, not just the Igbo. But what we realized is she was providing so much information, the oral history version of what we were looking at, that instead of just citing her as a source, we used her as a co-author and presented a paper with her as one of the co-authors because of her contributions and knowledge.
Yes.
We did that last year, as a matter of fact.
She was extremely knowledgeable, and that was an amazing thing of just even sitting at her kitchen table, is that you knew when you sat down, if you had a little bit of time, you were going to hear some fascinating stories.
But yeah. Yeah.
What were some of the things that you guys found in Behavior Cemetery?
We think it's a very different kind of plantation setup. The particular plantation we worked on was owned by Thomas Spalding, and he had a different approach. One of which was one of the things that he allowed that other plantation owners didn't is that the Igbo or whatever group was there would build their own houses, and they'd build it in an African style. And that was seen as threatening on a plantation on St. Simons Island. The plantation owner got an elderly slave who had made his own. You'd think he'd, you know, be overjoyed that he didn't have to pay for housing for this slave. But he made him tear it down because it was too African, which I thought was very interesting. And that didn't happen on Saplog, to the best of our knowledge, and we see evidence of these African-styled, I guess you would call it, or Caribbean, too. There's some Caribbean influences of the type of housing that they had was an admixture of tabby construction that was done at many plantations in the Southeast. Adding to that was a sort of an African shape and size and function that was a little bit different. So Cornelia really picked up on that difference and was very interested in seeing the evidence for that being expressed in the archaeological materials that we were excavating. Now what we're doing is trying to compare this with other sites mm-hmm. that have plantations where they didn't have that. I mean, it's a very small amount of freedom, but they could live where they wanted. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to live in rows like on other plantations, and they could construct their own houses if they wanted to. And so we've been trying to trace that down.
That's amazing. Now, if you guys are just joining me, we are speaking with Nicholas Hornerkamp, who is a professor at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, and he is talking about a lot of the research that he was doing over on Sapelo Island. So now, Nick, did you do any work up at Chocolate at that site?
Oh, yeah. That was the first field school I had was at Chocolate. And that's one of those plantations that has very structured layouts. Mm-hmm. And the landscape looks very different from the, not random, but What Spalding allowed was you could put your house anywhere as long as you made it to the work site. You live where you work. He didn't care exactly. It had to be near the work site,
right.
But that was the only rule. The plantation cabins for slaves at Chocolate are all in a row. There's a double row, and at the east end near the river, there's the big house, the plantation owner's house, which set up a way to keep your eye out, I guess,
yeah.
on slave life. I mean,
right.
there was really a reconnaissance of where the slaves were living, and different materials did nothing look like the amalgamation, the sort of combination of materials that we saw at the south end. That we saw at Chocolate was a completely different kind of approach. There's an economic history that goes on with these plantations that is really, we're just starting to get a sense of now. It's really different from place to place. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, all these guys were trying to make money off of using human beings as slaves. And some of them worked, some of them didn't, but it's really quite diverse.
Yeah,
the approaches that were used. And my colleague, Lindsay Cochran, and I kind of zeroed in on, and an earlier colleague, Ray Crook, on this variant that happened on the south end of Sapelo, in contrast to Chocolate Plantation.
Well, very, very fascinating. And I know that you are going to miss the influence of Cornelia there as you continue to do your research on the island. But Nick, I really appreciate your coming on and taking a few minutes to talk with us and share the research you were doing, and in particular that research that you were doing closely with Cornelia. So thank you so very much.
Yeah. I'm always going to turn to her with another question, and can't get those answers now.
Yeah. I think we all will be just trying to turn to her, and then, you know,
it's automatic.
It's automatic.
I mean, everybody I know says the same thing that you're saying.
Exactly. Well, we have our memories. That is the one thing that we can't hold on to. So thank you so much, Nick.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it.
It was an honor. Thank you.
Now, you guys sit tight, because when we come back, we're going to talk with Michelle Nicole Johnson, who is a historian as well, and she has written a book about Sapelo Island. So back in a moment here on Travel Bags with Anita and Friends.
Born and raised on the Sapelo River, I left to get some schooling. But now I'm back and I realize I'm the only one I was fooling. Sapelo River take me home. Let me fish you on board.